which in all fact I forgot entirely that I wrote, untitled. Of all the things my heart desires, the one that's most important, to manifest our fragile love, a flower of our fire. The fruit of union simply given, complicated, brought to life, with open eyes and hungry mouth, creator of the hell and heaven. A candle flame of short duration, burning brightly in the night, waving darkly till it's chosen, yardstick of a white implosion. Time and space superbly cancelled. Can you say where love exists? In heart and mind, in mountain cranny. Plastic crucifixion mangled. World in starlight, silent growing. Summer haze now growing cold, clear beyond the farthest edges. Face in moonlight now unknowing. Confusion spread its sticky fingers, tendrils of a searching mind. Withdraw, inhale the bird of wisdom. Exhale, the taste of peace now lingers. Of you and I, immortals all, we share a common secret, of which most dare not speak aloud, for fear that fear will call. To he or she we pass the clue, 'tis safe to talk of truth, of cattle skulls and baby skin, and sparkling morning dew. Short poem. Some dogs too long in a cage, much too tiny. They die when they finally get free, and shift to the dawn of a bird ringing morning, and rooster revels his alarming, alerting the world to the warm growing light. And aren't we fantastic? We dabble and furl, we cripple and clatter and pattern the world. No, again, no title to that. They just start rolling out. Untitled. I saw her for years before she was wedded. I saw her for years and now she is free. I saw her together with the one she had chosen, and the look in her eyes said she wanted to flee. But where can she run to and how can I find her? Where can she live in peace with her son? And where can we meet in this mad raving furnace, this hell we've created, this world out of one? Could we meet on the beach? Could we meet on the sun? Could we meet for a moment and look at the sun? For here we are twisted, here we are bled, there we are blessed, now we are sad. Then we were learning, then when will it come? O child of my life, with a child of your own, can you teach him to question, to live out alone, with joy in his sadness and light in his bones, strength in his weakness? I don't start that one again, can we?
Sure.
It's weird, I have to get this. Okay. I saw her for years before she was wedded. I saw her for years, and now she is free. I saw her together with the one she had chosen, and the look in her eyes said she wanted to flee. But where can she run to, and how can I find her? Where can she live in peace with her son? Where can we meet in this mad raving furnace, this hell we've created, this world out of one? Could we meet on the beach? Could we meet on the run? Could we meet for a moment and look at the sun? For here we are twisted, here we are bled, there we are blessed, now we are sad. Then we were learning, then when will it come? O child of my life, with a child of your own, can you teach him to question, to live out alone, with joy in his sadness and light in his bones, wisdom and patience and love in his eyes, strength in his weakness and all that implies? You are the water and he is the seed. The earth that he grows in is greedy with speed. abruptly be still is the end of that ride, but will not let it happen to keep him alive. I'll see her for years in mind and my pain, or walk through the forests together again. You maker of dreams, you woman of Saturn, be one with your God, with me doesn't matter. And another poem, unentitled. Slicing through my heart, a piercing bane of non-expression, like I cannot speak the words to far and wide, for that there's no magic in the word when it's improperly heard, when we're not listening, yet there is no other side. Oh, to release and shower heaven in our brains and in our hearts, but to forget the trembling temples and the used and creaking carts, the powdered cities and the bridges, mortared bones and rhymes and riddles, and to cancel out the flimsiest of gods. Stay in peace and not in anger, may we never let to languor the fiery force of our impulsion to the depths of our confusion, to confront the very fact that we are one. And one are we, the frightened people, cast you doubt upon the reason, or join the throng intent on total murder, of soliloquies of mourning birds, giraffes, and gently growing herbs. The truth of this greatly disturbs and brings me to the limit of these few and curious words. A statement. And we talked an awful lot about God, and neither one of us was on the nod. What else can you do in a little fishing town except talk about God? You want to turn that off just a second?
Okay.
The next two poems could very likely turn out to be lyrics sometime in the future, but they're just written and I'll go through them. Neither one is titled as yet. Love is peace in your heart, and you can't take it apart with all your wars and your silly masquerades. Accolades of fame and shelter through the rigid helter-skelter cannot bring it to you shining through the glades. Peace is love over mind. It is all there is to find. Mercy is the key to lock it in with. Waves of merely being on the sea of surging feelings that we're riding on, depending on the moments. We are God in all our parts, the light, the art of arts. Manifesting, do we blunder through our lives, living lackadaisically till we know that certain energy that saves our souls and cancels out all time. This one is entitled Loneliness. Your beauty is as of a thousand desert flowers, freshly bloomed after the only rain. Your spirit as a gentle breeze, becalmed, yet howling like a hurricane in pain. Your body's velt and loved, contented, juices flowing sweet like sugar cane. I drink your fountain, woman spring, absorb you in my love. Divinity wells up in us, no gods do dwell above. No devil shriek and wail below, nor sorcery thread its veil. The alchemy of unity defeats the only foe beside which we must pale. Let's do the long one. Okay. Turn that off just a second. It'll take a second to get it together. Another dubious statement, as it were. This came out at approximately 4:30 in the morning, out of a deep sleep, as usual, and just had to write it down. The only means of decreasing the action of fate on our lives is by the accurate utilization of all the perceptive senses and constant surveillance of all they are feeding back to us, be it mind or body, and to react accordingly within the limits of the situation, and then act to promote or demote the consequences of the original action, which can be an external force or an internal one. This is a poem by a girl named Janet Green. It's called, What is Blind? You say that the grass is green. What is green? Is it bright? What does bright mean? Is it light? What does light mean? Does bright mean white? What is white? You say that after a long rain, a mist covers the mountainside. What is a mist? Is it green? Is it bright? Is it light? Is it white? And you tell me that a mist looks like cotton. So I feel the cotton and it's soft. Is mist soft? You tell me that mist is a whitish gray and it's damp. What does whitish gray look like? When I put my hand through the mist, it was damp. But it doesn't feel like cotton does. You say that when you see the green grass through the mist on the mountainside, it is beautiful. What is beauty? I can sense it, but I cannot see it. Is beauty green? Is it white? Is it bright? Is it light? To me, beauty feels like a cozy room when I can hear the rain on the roof. To me, beauty is when I hear children playing. To me, beauty is life. But you say that life is also ugly. What is ugliness? Is it green? Is it white? Is it bright? Is it light? I can sense ugliness too. It is children crying. It is war. It is blind. Very good, that. Very good. Let's see if this is together. I think we got enough. This is the second fairy tale that I've written. It was written July and August of 1970. It's called Two Birds and One Stoned. Near the Helter Skelter Islands in the Dukedom of Dormir lived a strange and wily man who sat and pondered fear. And he fed his geese and ducklings with the fervor of a martyr. And he spoke with people near and far who came to trade and barter. Opals and piglets, diamonds and lyres, scorpion stings and cathedral-like spires, scimitar's edges a crystalline flight. He smiled and he bargained in the days that were light. But many such days were dark and bereft of light and of warmth and the things he had felt. People came not from their travels from near, and there was no one to relate to continue this fear. 'Twas on such an evening he fell into sleep, obscure and profound and behovian of peace, a sleep of desire, though full out of grasp, irresolute future and beckoning past. So under these gables an image was formed, a dream that was deemed prophesied and forsworn. The swirling and roiling began to come near, then passed the abyss and became very clear. A path in the mountains which led to a growth, a cascade of foliage on splintery slopes. A profusion of greenery never seen until he had shivered and touched its pastoral sheen, and passed through its lacework and under its fall, and saw the great opening that glimmered and called. Then he sailed through a tunnel that pierced deep the earth, that shimmered and trembled with its increasing girth. The passage of time was loath to his fate, and he soared ever downward, to which was bespake. And into a chamber of rich blue and gold, of cobblestones velvet on tapestries bold, to touch and to wonder their stories untold. Of women beloved, of men being hunted, of such scope and passion the senses were blunted. And to other sanctums and vaults to bedazzle, a labyrinth of visions in this castle of castles. Then into one room whose dimensions were smothered, and lined full of books with metallicized covers. The sanctorum of knowledge, the den of the sage, whose wisdom rang out from each yellowed page. But try as he might, there was no stopping his flight, and he flew ever onward, now upward toward light. And thence to a cavern of enormous proportions, supported by columns of emeraldic contortions, and radiant light from some hidden place that rippled and played on the great carven face. Surrounded by flowers and tropical ferns, nectaric waterfalls swept down in their turns and sated the thirst of the creatures of mere, and yet they were not, though albeit were here. Crustaceans and fowl of pulsating hues, from rose-colored yellows to amethystine blues. And he in his dream filled all the space, and he looked once again on the huge carven face. A face of the total, a face of the void, a face of creation and of which was destroyed. But what he remembered when he finally awoke was the thunderous voice and the words that it spoke. The secret of living is simply in giving, and it encompasses naught but these words, and so to go free to see and to be, you must search for the two mighty birds. He awoke very slowly, his mind yet sharp. The dawn had not come, and the skies were still dark. And he pondered the message, the sound of the voice, for he felt it spoke truth, and in that he rejoiced. Like the pass of a cloud, the day came warm and light, and he laughed and he worked in utmost delight. And some came with horseshoes, and some came with corn, and one woman came with a small crimson horn. Such a mute, mellow sound that came from its flange, a timbre compelling, a note to entrance. So he gave her a buckle of pale baby blue that gleamed like the sea sky and fresh morning dew. And as she departed, she spoke very low, "The cavern you seek is in Mount Ab Initio, and the sound of this horn will lead you on the way. But tarry a while and await the right day." Then came the spring with its sharp reborn green, and he set out with the horn to find what he'd seen. After days in the mountains he found he was lost, so he sounded the horn in directions he'd crossed. The note rang out soft and long and precise, and then from the east came its echo in thrice. And he started anew, his voice singing low, toward its snow-covered majesty, Mount Ab Initio. And then on its slope with the high sun at noon, and its gray barren rock like the face of the moon, into his sight came the opening within, but with no verdant luster as then it had been. Then came a noise as of rushing air, and two mighty forms swept out of their lair, and flashed o'erhead from out of the maw, and he fell on his knees and trembled with awe. And the gape in the mountains had closed fully clean to a cliff-starkened rock with nary a seam. His mind in confusion, his thought full of race, he cried out to the air, "I must see the face." Towards us you were bound, and 'tis us you have found, and we will tell you all you must know, and that is to wait and ne'er again see the face until comes the day you must go. And that is the time, an unbeknown date, when you are to die and choose you your fate. But if ever you need us, you have but to blow, and we will come instantly like the firefly's glow. And now you must know us, so look if you will, and be not afraid, and sit very still. A troubled dark shadow crept over the slope, and an immense silver shape cast out all his hope. With mercurial swiftness spattered and spilled, it shimmered and sparkled like lightning bestilled. A huge argent bird with plumage of woe, it spoke to him crying in the voice of surred snow. I am called Sadness, and I am called Sorrow, and my wings make the ill wind of yesterday and tomorrow. And when I kiss your eyes, crystal eggs will I lay, for the eggs are your tears on that wretched day. So may never you call me, not even in pain, yet fleet will I come like the fast-falling rain, and enter your heart and make you forlorn with two piercing notes from the small crimson horn. With a rumble of thunder and a rush of cold wind, the bird it had gone, and the light shone again. Yet he was warm and alive, and when spent was his dread, came a great golden bird with the sun round its head. An aura of brilliance, a corona of flame, it sang and it rilled as nearer it came. And he shielded his eyes and looked up the stair at the shape incandescent in the loud ringing air. Scintillant, prismatic, its splendor bestudded with flashes of radiance that streaked out asunder. It gleamed and it glittered, it hovered and spun, and glowed out its luster to twice that of the sun. And the man felt a trembling so deep in his breast, and he smiled at the vision, and his mind came to rest. I am called Rapture, and I am called Joy, and my song is the laughter in each girl and boy. My wings spread the smile on each of their faces, the dark and the light of all conscious races. And only once will I kiss you there on your mouth, and your eyes will light up as my presence is now. And a softly blown note from the tiny red horn will bring my flight to you in eve or in morn. But never forget, my human-like brother, to call on the one is to call on the other. In a blaze of gold light, this bird it had gone, and all that was left was its echoing song, and the dry, barren landscape, and a weak-filtered sun. And the man turned around and started slowly for home. As the years passed, his life became worse. He was weakened by sickness and slandered and cursed. But at each downward turn, he thought of the face and the crisp crimson horn in its well-hidden place. And only once did he use it in a less drastic measure to call upon joy and to call upon pleasure. Now in matters of numbers, the reaction is quick, but in matters of heart, there is time's ebbing tick. When the firebird had gone whence it came, the second was there and called out his name and filled his next days with despair and remorse till he returned to his labor with the utmost of force. A decade went by and he was unable to toil, and he retired to a forest of sweet-smelling soil. A greenwood of pines, erect, tall, and thin, with others contorted and twisted by wind, a canopied shelf of needle-thin leaf, and a sun-speckled carpet light brown underneath. A place of contemplation, a grove full of peace. He pondered the changes and awaited release. And then on a night of the full beaming moon, he knew death was near and would come for him soon. Precious horn in his hand, he softly blew thrice and waited with patience the birds he'd enticed. A breeze had been gently caressing the trees, and now it had stopped, and still were the leaves. A curtain of silence descended around, and he raised his tired head from the moon-tessellate ground. And then came a stirring, but not that of wind, but of all that around him and the structures within. Before the white orb, scudded gray mottled clouds that sifted and flurried like archaic shrouds. And out of the ether came the two mighty birds to be with their caller and hear his last words. Iridescent and shining, they hovered o'erhead, and he sat himself down on his pine needle bed. You've blown on the horn, and we've come to your plea, but there's naught we can do. What must be, let it be. In these last nether moments, my mind it is clear, and I know I have conquered that which men have named fear. And I called you but once in drama and shame, and you came to me quickly like a hot roaring flame. And I learned of the balance that you spoke to me of, and it taught me but one thing, and that is to love. To be free and to love like a storm-scattered spore, for where freedom abounds, it will create yet more. But the ultimate question that resounds in my heart, are you the only two birds from the primeval start? No, in each living being there exists in their sphere two more giant birds and the dragon of fear, the gorilla of greed, the panther of passion, the viper of violence, and the rose of compassion. I have one request before my fate calls. Can you will yourselves down to become very small? Because now that I know that you must come too, it's best we're together and share in the truth. And kiss me again to abide in your charms, and stroke your soft down in my weakening arms. Then the two immense birds dwindled down in their size, and their luminous beam shone forth from his eyes. and joy kissed his right eye, and sorrow the left, with his crystallized tears and emotions now cleft. He stroked their bright plumes and audibly sighed, then slashed both their throats and quietly died.
Tape is cheap.
I used over and over.
I think that's about all the new things I've got down. Yeah, all that's old.
How about that letter?
Let me see if I can find that letter. Let's see. Got a Mom's apple pie advertisement in here. Oh boy, it's that rank, man.
At the airport, huh?
Yeah, right. I never figure out for the life of me how that got past Billboard, man. How it got past the people in there. Oh, that letter should be in here somewhere. Oh. Ah, the letter. Is this the letter? It certainly is. It certainly is. Dear sir, I address you attentively in name the beat scholastic movement that has adopted that juvenile and funny music with the objective of to make to know in all the city of Tucumán and in the next cities too. With that objective, will inaugurate it with a party where it'll listen, it'll dance, music of all types, beat, rock and roll, soul, jazz, etc. We have got the best discotheque of the North Argentina. The only things that we haven't got are poster of the Shocking Blue, The Who, traffic, and information about those bands of where we should take off reading to be right on the wall for what we should. Thank you very much. You'll be surprised for the demand that we make you from this far place, but we shouldn't take off those things only from the own place where the last detail make in it before going out the exit records. Waiting anxiously for your correspondence, I tell you goodbye in name of the Beat Scholastic Movement and thank very much your attention. Sincerely, Carlos Marco Tulio, Monte Agudo 181, San Miguel de Tucumán, República Argentina. PD, please send them to the particular address of the chose leader of the work. Boy, that's a letter, man. That's very strange, that letter. What do we have here? Oh, Times of a Madman Trials of the Thief. Oh, mm-hmm. That's about it, really. Those are the newest things.
That makes 10 years worth.
Huh?
I say that makes 10 years worth.
Yeah, that makes 10 years. What I've just read?
No.
Oh, all of this in here?
Last time you
between
did about 9 years worth.
Yeah, about 9 years. Now it makes it 10 years. Exactly. Another year gone down. Gone down or coming up? Coming up, I think, is more appropriate. But, I think there's another fairy tale in the works also sometime soon. It's really very hard to... The point is I want to always really touch something, you know, rather than just getting, than just putting like a whole lot of words together. I really like to to take the metaphysical aspect of the individual, jerk him out of himself, throw him on the ground and stomp on him 4 or 5 times, you know, because it really gets to you that way. But I think that second fairy tale sort of turned you around there at the very, because you really didn't know it was, what, man? You know? But anyway.
Oh, look at, oh, this good habit.
But I'm going to talk to Richard tonight about getting together. How many minutes is on the tape there, you figure?
Well,
38. 30, how much have we got left, you figure?
About 7.
About 7, no.
There's more tape.
You want to put a fresh tape up and I'll do the same. First fairy tale.
Sure.
Put it on the other side.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. This fairy tale is called The Beginning of the End of the Story. And 1,000,000,000 things have gone reeling through my mind, of whirls and girls and traffic snarls and thoughts tremendously exciting. Red and gold are ripples of but one which I was seeing, black and gray are waves of the other, the one which I was fleeing. It came to pass on this bleak night in the house of Hansel and Gretel, in the house of the girl with salmon feet and bright disordered metal, with diamonds and rubies all in her hair and her flesh lovely eyes and fire. We came to the place known only to us as the house in the land of Ire. Now also in this land was a lovely witch who rode in the skies with a fox, and she lived in a cave with a donkey or two, and a rooster she kept in a box. Now the donkey, the rooster, the fox, and she were said to have magical powers, to bring rain to the land, or sea to the skies, or love to the poor dying flowers. And the flowers in turn would face towards her and give back her magical powers with a fragrance so sweet of lavender peat and of candlelight scent in the hours. Now one day the witch flew away from her home in the valley of myriad streams, to go to the land of a man she had met, who was known as the Seer of Dreams. She said, "Can you tell me the time of the day in all of the worlds we have seen? The world of the dove, the world of the love, and the world of the mountains of Breen. And what is its color, and why it's alive, so peaceful and fertile and clean?" He said of the time, it's much like a rhyme, it comes and it ripples away. And he said of the dove, it's the same as the love, and the worlds are together forever. And the mountains of Breen have always been clean, and the color is far velvet green. So the witch thanked him much for his wisdom and such, and said she must travel again. So the seer reached down to the base of his robe and produced such a beautiful gem. First it flashed red, then it flashed green, then again it went silver and blue. This jewel is the night, and this jewel is the day, and it works for one person but you. And that's the one that you love, who fits like a glove, and who stares at you as through a mist. And just counting some, that day will become. And soon you'll be reached and be kissed. So when you're in trouble, just reach for this bauble, and it will turn any night into day, and likewise in turn the day into night. And nothing will know what to say. Then the seer reached out and stroked her long hair and vanished out into the air. So the witch followed suit, and quick as a hoot, she had traveled as far as the moon. And the dwarf that was there said, "Good heavens, my dear, I didn't expect you so soon." But to say more for the dwarf, he was not quite as short as dwarves were expected to be. His eyes were a puzzle, and his hair was quite long, and he repeatedly said, "Do you see?" "Do I see what?" the witch always said, while on both her hands flowed her hair. "Why, the table I made," he'd cry with a grin, and he'd fling both his hands in the air. Now this answer wasn't rightly what the witch had wanted to hear, nor not at all wrong, nor not at all right, but not exactly just what she had feared. But nevertheless, he'd stamp both his feet, and he'd laugh in his luminous beard. But then that they'd forget, and they'd speak with regret of their friends who had lived in the clouds, in a white serene house with a terry lean mouse and a cat named Jebediah Benign Hossafat, who wasn't so bright but usually right in the things he would say off the bat. But their friend was a horse who was special, of course. He was known as a winged unicorn, with silver-white hooves and a long flowing mane and a multi-hued pearlescent horn. And they'd lived there for years without any tears until came the time of the war and bad flying things and electrical rings and storms that raged just out the door. Now one day, you see, they were just having tea when the window shattered in with a crash, and the table went flying, and the mouse started crying, and there instantly followed a flash, and Jebediah said, "Vile, it's the big rubbish pile who never can find where to land, and wherever he'll go there's always black snow and an evil falls over the land." But now back to the witch, who was fit to be stitched, for she remembered this ever so well. She was flying along with the fox and the cat. She'd come from the musical dell, and she felt with a start in the pulse of her heart that something was wrong down below. So they flew through the air to see what was there, and soon they flew into dark snow. And it got darker and darker and starker and starker, and suddenly went fully black, and they tumbled around in the midst of old cans and dry, broken-down bubble pipes. And there were other things there that were caught in the snare, things ugly and beastly and mean, like minotaurs' heads and uniformed feds and things that should never be seen. And in the midst of it all, they continued to fall until they came down with a bump, and all three got a lump. They were literally stumped. They didn't know where in the world they could be. It was cold and then hot and then wet and then dry, and they'll tell you they still couldn't see. But one thing had fared. They knew they weren't scared, for the witch had powers to behold, and the powers were fair in her art and the air. And she bade the cat and the fox to come close, for she had decided that enough time had bided to find out what this thing was they were in. So with courage up front and a magical stunt, they began on their terrible hunt. And the cat started howling, and the fox started yowling, and the witch began speaking in Latin. "Non illegitimatus carborundum," she said. Everything here has begun in my head. So spin around, we'll finish this plight. Begone with your demons and devils of night. Away with your evil that lies in this place. Straight away to your own land and leave not a trace. So spoke she these words with her face full aglow. And all of a sudden there was white crystal snow. So gently falling, but with a sound never so loud. But then it quietly returned to a bright, peaceful cloud. And off to the right was the sound of a grouse. And off to the left was the white, serene house. And all of her friends were there at the door, beckoning and calling for them to come over. You must stay a month or a week at the least, and we'll celebrate your victory with a magnificent feast. And so then it was, the place was a buzz, and friends came from great far and near. And some of the dishes you simply must hear. There was eggplant and breadfruit and olives and oil and honeydew cakes and rock candy soil, figs and bananas and lychees and cream. And all was so lovely it seemed like a dream. But then all were gone, except the witch and her friends. And the unicorn said, "Now we must make amends. We all have just been through a terrible strife, and you came just in time and gave us our life. So a gift we will give that will be as long as you live, that will float in the sky o'er your land." Now the witch had sat next to a blue dragon snap, and the unicorn came and put his head in her lap. "Just follow the spiral on my horn with your hand, and think in your mind of your own lovely land." And as soon as she'd done this, there appeared up above the most beautiful colors that were made out of love. The violet is for the color you wear, the indigo's for the brilliant night air. The blue is the color to go round your head. Green is the place where you make your bed. The yellow's the one to fashion your sun. The orange is the thing to eat and have fun. "And my blood is red," the unicorn said, and his horn had spread out like a fan. So the witch said goodbye with a tear in her eye, and that's how the rainbow began.
Like that fairy tale?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Sure.
The other one's just total and total and utter opposite of the first. You know? I mean, I guess you could call it that.
After man began.
After man began. Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. But I mean, the start of that one, you know. You know that came out of an acid trip, man. And 1,000,000,000 things have gone reeling through my mind. You bet, man. Absolutely. Yeah, that was the first... that was the first major thing I wrote in Italy. Was that fairy tale?
This one here?
Yeah.
How long ago?
7 years ago, I guess. Because it's a good 3 years in between each fairy tale. Because you have to amass, you know, experience and things. And,
There's another one cooking. I'm getting vague hints, and something about to storm out, steam out, or through, or whatever. I don't know. I guess it'll have to be done this summer, or maybe this Christmas. Because I just feel that tension, that anticipation of, you know. It's really horrible writing, man. It's really, I hate writing. It's like that song Nilsson does, you know, I Can't Live, that uh-huh. thing. I met his producer, and I said, listen, man, I said, tell Harry I'm awful sorry he had to write that song, you know. And he said, oh, he didn't write it, and just really blew me out, you know, right there, because I figured he'd written almost everything he did, you know. And he didn't write it, somebody else wrote it. And I said, oh, well, whoever wrote it, tell him I'm really sorry that they had to write it, man. Because it's like, it's when you have to write something like that, man, that's just literally torture, you know, to sit down and get it out, the music and the words. And it's like the thing about what I was saying about the second fairy tale, Two Birds and One Stone. What happened is Anello Capuano, the cat that's playing congas. I sat down in the morning. It was one of the mornings when you feel pretty good. I figured, well, I'll just rip this off here, you know. It'd take me a little while, you know. I'll work for a little bit. And I got a half a page written. And Anello came up. And my desk is right beside the door. And Anello came up and my keys and the padlock to the door were right beside me where I was writing. And he came up and I'd written half a page of it. And I'd got to the point where the guy goes to sleep and begins to have the dream. And the very unobtrusively edged over and slid my keys and padlock into his hand, you know. And I didn't see him because I was staring out the window. And he said, see you a minute. He says, we had this standing joke of, like, you know, when one of us had to go somewhere just for a minute, we'd say, wait here. And it's right, wait right here, man. No matter where you're standing or where you're sitting or what you're doing. If the cat says, wait here, right, I'll wait right here. You know, and like, if you're in the middle of the street, man, if one of us said, wait here, no matter where you are, you had to wait there at that precise spot. And it got really weird sometimes, man, because we'd start playing these practical jokes on each other. You know, like we're standing there or we're in the sea, right? We're in the Mediterranean. And on a fairly rough day, you know, and we're both body surfing, riding these waves in. And he's breaking, fighting his way, trying to get back out. And I yell at him, wait there, you know? It's like, oh, you can't move, man. It's like you're battered back onto the beach again. Or I'd dive off the side of a boat or something, and he'd catch me in midair. Wait there, man, you know? But he took my keys away, and I'm still there. I said, yeah, I'll see you in a minute, man. And the next thing I knew, I heard this clink. And I looked over, and he had put the padlock on the door. And I said, hey, what are you doing, man? And he's a very strange dude, very strange Italian. He's not very difficult, but he just completely and totally outwitted the whole draft system of Italy. He just made them think that he was like completely and totally insane, you know. And which, well, who knows, you know, but I mean, he just did them and he got completely out of the army. Anyway, he put the padlock on the door and just gave me this enigmatic little smile and said, I'll let you out when you finish it. And Fuck you, what do you mean you let me out when I finish it? You can't, you know, and I'm yelling and hollering, I'm steaming around the room, and he just smiled and went back downstairs to the house because he was living below me. And he stayed down there, and that's the only way out of the house, because the front windows, it's an 85-foot drop straight down, you know, because I'm on a mountainside. And there was no way I could get out of that house. That was the only way out. And once you put the padlock on the outside and you're inside, that's it, me. You ain't going anywhere. And so finally, after 2 or 3 hours, I steamed and stormed and yelled and swore and gone. And finally, you know, I just realized that the cat meant exactly what he said. He said, I'm not going to let you out until you finish it. So I sat down and I said, well, I'll finish the goddamn thing then. And so I sat down and I started writing. And about 6 o'clock that evening, I heard a rap on the window. And I saw a stick banging on the bottom of my window. And I went over and you can reach down to his window. I lay down on the floor. And he handed me up this plate of spaghetti. And he said, do you need anything from the grocery store? Ti bisogna qualche cosa della salumeria. No, alla nemichita morte di stronzo. Ow! You know, and I'm going on at this dude in Italian, man. And finally, I finished it. I said, oh, basta, ho finito. Apre questa alla nemichita porta. You know, I opened this door immediate, man. And he took the lock off, and I went straight down to the Mediterranean and went swimming or something. But he wouldn't, no way he was going to let me out of there, man. Anyhow. Yes, I know.
I think if there's more that wants to get done, Dennis is heading out that way, and he can drop off.
What?
Bradley. He's going to the quiet night.
I've got to go, too. Yeah, I've got to go, too.
Good enough.
But stop that a minute.